And now, Jalen and Jacoby.
We're the Pop Patrol. Head to the dirt.
Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Worry about my posse getting jumped. Cause if we ever do, yo TB, pop the trunk.
Cause we make a pop the trunk and hit the switch.
Now act stupid, I'll pop the trunk. Now give me your boom.
Welcome to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen Rose, still on a much-deserved vacation, gives us the opportunity to have some fresh voices on the show. I want to thank Malika and Shanae for coming by yesterday.
Shout out.
We have another person taking their mated voyage on the spaceship that is Jalen and Jacoby. George Sedano, everybody.
What's up?
George Sedano. Thanks so much for doing the show. We've known each other for a long time. I feel like we've done the show together before, but my producers tell me that I'm wrong.
No. We used to do Nation, you and I, back in the day. Yeah. R.I.P.
Yep. And tell everyone, you've got Sedano Show. What else do you have? What else is going on?
Oh, my God. I'm like everywhere, dude. I'm on – Rachel's kind enough to have me on The Jump, Around the Horn.
Often.
You know, I pop on SportsCenter. I got a lot of
you
stuff.
You do sideline? You do
sidelines
games.
NBA? Yeah, they get really mad, actually, if I forget that part of it. Yeah, sidelines NBA is really important, and I love
well,
it. And
also, the Daily Radio Show.
Yeah, daily radio show in L.A., which is cool. People can subscribe to the podcast if they want. It's very L.A.-centric, obviously, being in L.A., but, man, it's a crazy time to be in L.A., so it's, like, perfect
exactly.
If you're into those teams.
That one's called The Sedano Show, if you're looking for it on podcasting areas.
Yeah, aptly named, so, by the way.
Yes,
it's very creative on my
well,
part.
It used to be, like, Keyshawn, George, LZ, the janitor, the producer, Funches. It was just like, now it's just The Sedano Show.
Yeah, exactly. Much simpler.
Why not? This show was once upon a time called the Jalen Rose Podcast.
Was it
because
really?
I wasn't sure if I wanted to continue to do it. I mean, that's really what it was. So I could always abandon ship if it started to get weird.
Now, was that a Bill Simmons creation? He just was like, you know what? We don't need you yet, Jacoby. And then, like, you just had to finagle your way in there?
No, but I love how we're going to do a bio about you, but you're such a good host. You tried to spin it and flip it and make it about me. But the people that listen to this podcast have heard the origin story so many times that they're tired of it by now. Yep. We'd be much more interested in yours.
Yep.
So, my understanding of you is pretty tertiary, but you're like a Miami person, right?
I am. You know, Miami's known for a number of things, mostly excess, mm-hmm. which is pretty awesome. Like, we love go big or go home, basically. You know, so yeah, I'm a Miami boy, except baseball teams. Like, it's weird. So people like clown me a little bit for this because they're like, well, why aren't you a Marlins fan? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I was... In 1993, I was already like 14 or 15 years old, like, or 16 years old. So I wasn't like, I was a Yankee fan growing up. Like, why wouldn't I be? Plus, by the way, the Yankees stunk when I grew up. But yeah, Miami's awesome, dude. Have you been?
Of course. Of course I've been to Miami many, many, many times for work and for play. And I have a lot more fun when I go for play.
Yeah. The thing with Miami is you have to be very careful. Much like Vegas. It's, you know, 24-hour liquor licenses. Like, you can party literally all day, every day. You might stumble into Dan Le Batard somewhere. I mean, it's kind of a strange place.
Or he might stumble into you. Who knows?
Fair.
My Miami experiences have been varied. You know what I mean? I think Jalen has taught me a lot of things. But one of the things he taught you is, like, your behavior varies a lot depending on who bought your plane ticket. Like, if you put your own credit card down for the plane in the hotel, like, there's a little bit more leeway in your behavior. But if your employer, this doesn't just go for ESPN, this is everybody listening to this podcast. If your employer buys the plane ticket and the hotel, then you really have to dial it back pretty far.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. Like, you dial it back almost completely. Like, you know, you're just like social drinking at that point. I just spent like 12 days in Vegas for Summer League and, right. Man, like, it's, Miami's like this too. It's like one of those cities where, like, you have to pace yourself. Like, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you have to make sure whether you're going there for work or not, you have to just be prepared for the potential quick turn to debauchery. And you have to be able to avoid the quick turn, if necessary.
Yeah, see, I did a stint in Vegas for about 13 days once. And, like, after about 4 days, it just becomes kind of like another place.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? It's just like, after about 4 days, like, you just kind of, like, you're kind of over it. Yeah. And then you see, like, I remember going to work at 7:30 in the morning and walking through the lobby and just watching this guy who, like, you know, he certainly looked like at one point he had money, but he clearly had just lost it all. And he was on the floor just crying. And I was like, let that man be a warning, because I'm, like, two bad decisions and a couple double downs away from being that person. You know what I mean? Like, at any given time, I can be the guy crying in the corner, so you must respect that.
Yeah, my funny Vegas story was a couple years ago. I was there for a fight, And that's when I was doing the morning show on ESPN LA Radio. Yep. And I walked out of my hotel room or whatever and like out into the casino. And it was like 5:30 in the morning because we were going on at 6. And there was a lady of the night there ready and waiting, sitting at a slot machine. She's like, "Hey, baby." And I was like, "Not tonight, devil. Not tonight, Satan. I got to go to work. Sorry."
not gonna get me. Yeah. I was in Vegas this weekend with Katie Nolan and her show for the WNBA All-Star weekend. We had a great time. But like, I'm a Vegas veteran, so I knew fly in late Thursday, work Friday, fly out Friday night. If I have one thing I've learned over time, and again, I'm older than a lot of people, a lot of our colleagues, and I've been at ESPN for like 2 decades. If I don't have professional duties, then I'm not in the city. You know what I mean? Like yeah. if we wrap at noon on Saturday, I'm flying out Saturday night. Because you can't just leave me in a city with no professional responsibilities.
I agree.
For disaster.
And here's the other thing. I don't know about you, and this is going to sound kind of sappy and kind of old too. Is like I kind of miss my kids after a minute. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, not me.
Really? No, you're not in on that. Maybe it's because I'm not around them as much. Like my wife has got the heavy duty like mom duties. And I just kind of like am a dad that kind of comes in and plays like good cop. Like, "Hey, kids, I'm here. Come hug me."
Oh, yeah. Moms resent that, too. Wives resent that. Like, they're disciplinarians all day long and trying to get them to eat and change and put socks on them. Yeah. And then dad comes home like, "Hey, let's party. Yeah. Let's wrestle. Let's make noise. Let's get riled up."
Right.
And my wife just looks at me like, "I hate you. And if I didn't need your help with the kids, I wouldn't just divorce you. I'd probably murder you if I could get away with it."
For sure. Yes. Yeah. I would be buried 6 feet under by now just because of the role I play.
And you've got the 5-year-old daughter and a younger kid as well?
Yeah, so I've got a 5-year-old daughter and the 10-month-old.
God!
Yeah.
I didn't know you're the 10-month-old, because when I was in L.A., that wasn't a thing yet.
No. We just had a 10-month-old, obviously, months ago. And yeah, that you know that. Like, and here's the thing. So there's for anyone who has kids, like, and you can understand this, there's an inherent advantage to the age gap, because there's, like, as far as the kids are concerned, like, my daughter's like, you know, she wants to be a big kid. She doesn't want to be a baby. But here's the other problem, is that you were as a parent, out of the diaper phase, the nonsense phase, the sleeplessness.
Now you're
back in that fold again. And it's like, damn, I can't believe I did this again.
Yeah. And also, like, you don't realize how little you retain, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From the first kid. Like, we have a 6-year-old boy and then twin daughters that are now 3.5. And like, honestly, like, I could not handle another newborn, because we're out of the woods. Like you said, like, there's a right around 2, when they can talk and walk, and when they're crying, you can say what's wrong and they can answer you.
Right.
Like, no matter how nonsensical it is, but like, at least they'll answer you. Like, when your 10-month-old start crying, like, you just like bounce them around and walk outside and just like try everything, put them in the car, put them in the swing thing, give them to someone else, like whatever it takes.
There's no logic, no rhyme or reason to any of this stuff. You're winging the whole thing when they're that age, which is a challenge. Now, we are actually going to Miami next month. Which is kind of brutal, but like, because Miami in August is, as much as I love my hometown, it's the worst time to be there, because it's literally just like 110% humidity. If I don't go there and take these children to see my mother and my sister and people of that ilk, I'm in a lot of trouble. So my daughter, because when we had her, I had just gotten the job at ESPN. I was in Bristol. My wife wanted to have her in Miami with her doctor and all that. So the company was cool enough to let me work out of Miami for a few months while she was born. But we were constantly back and forth between Connecticut and Miami, because it's a 2.5-hour flight. But with this guy,
you get the help. With the new kid, you want the help.
Yeah. But with this guy, here's the deal. Here's the challenge, Jacoby. The plane. He's never been on a plane. My daughter was on a plane at 8 weeks. She was like a plane, like, she had been on more plane rides than most adults by the time she was like 2. Yeah.
She's upgrading herself with miles.
Yeah, she has her own account.
I'll be first class, Dad. Yeah. I've got miles.
We got family pooling. Like, we're good. But this guy's never been on a plane, and he's a huge pain in the ass. Like, she was like super gentle. It's what I like to say is, like, my daughter is the white side of the family, and my son is the Cuban side of the family. He's loud.
You're allowed to say that. I'm not.
Yeah, he's obnoxious. He's loud, like, he's just like super ornery and just like can go 0 to 60 very quickly. So I am dreading this 6-hour plane ride to Miami.
Awful. Yeah. It would be awful.
I told my wife, like, can we Benadryl him? Is that like a thing? Like, can we do that? Like, is that real?
Oh, I've never done that.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never. I would never get on a plane with a 1-year-old and say, wife, does he have a fever?
Yeah.
Do you think he's a little under the weather?
Should he be drowsy?
Because one thing that I did is we booked red eyes at that age.
Oh.
It's a huge roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Huge roll of the dice.
Mm.
If it goes right, you're golden. If it goes wrong,
there are
200 people around you that just want you dead.
Yeah.
And they would be willing to probably put your baby, they wouldn't want to throw your baby out the window. They'd probably just want to put your baby in the cargo area if they knew it would live.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you something. There is no chance I would take that chance because I love to sleep. And have young children, that is not a thing. I am not subjecting other adults to that. So we'd rather take like we're taking like a 10 a.m. flight. Just everyone's awake.
Here's the thing. Your daughter, like everyone's got little limitations and every family's different with screen time or whatever, but all bets are off in the plane.
Yeah.
Like you just put headphones on your daughter and like she'll be fine. Snacks, headphones.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about her. Now you have 2-on-1 at least. You got the numbers in your favor.
Yeah.
You switch off. Just basically walking up and down the aisles with a crying 10-month-old. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
I remember doing it, and this dude had like a 2-year-old, and he looked at me because it was my first kid. He looked at me and he goes like, it gets easier.
Yeah.
We
have to do is arrive, because as you know this, Jacoby, like once we get to Miami, like my wife and I can actually enjoy Miami because everyone's just going to want to be around the kids. So I could literally be like, hey, you want the kids for the night? Be like, yeah, all right, prime 112, honey, let's go.
Yeah, yes, you can do that at least once. You booked in that at least once, right?
Well, no, I could do that with like my mom. Then I've got, like, my in-laws are also coming on the trip. They're going to spend, they're going
to hang out. Whoa. What is happening? Wait. You're bringing the in-laws?
Well, they also have a condo in Miami, like a vacation condo. In the same building.
I thought they were staying at the same house and all that.
No, this is a terrible plan. They've got their own setup.
They've got their own thing.
Yeah. They've got their own setup. Yeah. So I've got my mom one night. I've got the in-laws still there in their own spot. And then I've got, like, my sister. So we actually potentially have 3 nights of Let's Get Down on South Beach.
Oh, that's fun. And I also know, like, when you have 2 kids, Let's Get Down on South Beach is, like, a really nice dinner and, like, maybe a cocktail afterwards. But you're
right.
Home by 11.
Yeah. It's no longer.
Yeah, you're not getting down on South Beach. Yeah.
It's no longer 5 a.m. Like, that. Those days are done. I'm washed, for sure.
Those days were great.
What was that?
Me and my wife took a couple trips there and had some 5 a.m. nights and ended up at that diner at the very, very bottom of South Beach.
Oh, you know, the Big Pink?
The Big Pink, yeah. Every morning in the Big Pink, just going in there, groggy-eyed, and ordering pancakes and orange juices and coffees and just getting ourselves together for the day ahead of us. So Reggie might edit this all out because he doesn't have any kids.
No.
And we have a lot of younger people that listen to this. So you never know. You never know what Reggie's going to do because Reggie's in charge of the content in the podcast. So I want to switch gears and get...
Before you switch gears, what we did is we warned people. Like, this, that could be, like, the best, contraceptive, basically, is listening to this podcast.
Yeah. But I love when you said you miss your children. I haven't felt that way. Unless I'm out of town, I see them every day.
Yeah.
There's just so many of them.
But you do have a lot.
From time to time, I do miss them.
Yeah.
But, man, sometimes I get home. And I want to do the Homer Simpson thing when he puts his hat on the hat rack and then turns around. Like, sometimes I get home and they're screaming and crying. I'm just like, what is the benefit of being in this home?
Yeah.
Like, I got to go back out. There's a bar, like, right there I could be at watching the game. We're going to get to some more details about the vibe in Los Angeles, the NBA offseason, how that's all changed. But right now, it's time to give the people what they want. I've tried it all. When I switched over to a mechanized toothbrush, I will never switch back. And I used to have all of the different ones on the market, and I have found the best one, the one head and shoulders, pun not intended, far superior over all the competition, and that's Quip. The Quip is so perfect. It is so sleek, and the design is such that you don't have that big docking station. It's not huge. It doesn't take up too much space. You know, I travel a lot for work. You can just drop the Quip right into your suitcase, and it takes up no time. The compact and wireless design tucks easily into the corner of your carry-on or your back pocket if you're just spending the night. And as travel-ready cover protects your brush from the sandy swimsuits and luggage slip-ups. Trust me, I just got back from Las Vegas. and I brought my Quip. They've got that little cover on it. You just throw it in there. You don't have to worry about it at all. And there's a 3-month battery life. I'm telling you, 3-month battery life. My Quip just ran out of batteries this morning, and I've had that thing for longer than 3 months. And I'm not kidding. I really was using it this morning, and it ran out of batteries. Sometimes what else the Quip does is the Quip stops every 30 seconds to alert you to switch sides of your teeth. So make sure you get the perfect amount of time spent on each part of your mouth. They're making it easier than ever for you to keep up with your wake up and wind down routine when you're out of the office. And here's the thing. Sometimes you need a vacation from your vacation. Delayed flights, hotel snafus, chatty travel companions. We all know how summer goes. Get away for 2 minutes twice a day with Quip. Their wireless electric toothbrush is lightweight and compact. It's perfect for travel. And here's the thing. It's the best toothbrush I've ever had. A lot of people brush too hard. Previous electric toothbrushes I had, they're too abrasive. You think that the stronger, more powerful is a better brush. It's not. Quip is the perfect gentle brush, and it gives you that 2-minute timer, gives you 30 seconds for each side of your mouth. It's the best, and it's beautiful. The design is great. It declutters your sink or cabinet, makes traveling with an electric toothbrush so much easier. The brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. A friendly reminder when it's time to refresh and stay committed to your oral health. And here's the thing. I love Quip so much. That's why I'm taking it in the car with all three of my kids and my wife on a long drive up the East Coast to Cape Cod later this summer. And the Quip is just so nice to have. And it starts, get this, at just $25. If you go to getquip.com, GETQUIP.com/Jalen right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack for free at GETQUIP.com/Jalen. Get the Quip like me. Once you live that Quip life, you will never go back. Well, Ezekiel Elliott is still not at camp with the Cowboys. He's holding out for a new contract, as I'm sure everyone knows. However, Jerry Jones spoke about it, and he was very interesting. Let's listen to Jerry.
Well, of course, Emmitt had participated in a Super Bowl, being the first rushing champ. Now, this is very important. First time ever a rushing champion was on a Super Bowl winning team. The point there is, you don't have to have a rushing champion to win a Super Bowl. But Emmitt was the first one to do it. And that's one of the dilemmas at running back, is that the league knows that you can win Super Bowls and not have the Emmitt Smith back there, or not have Zeke back there.
I love this so much. I love it. I love it. Do you think he's making a point about his general philosophy about football and the NFL, or do you think he's just negotiating through the media?
This is clearly a negotiation ploy. And here's the thing. Jerry tends to forget. He also caved in on Emmitt Smith, okay, back in the day, too. So, like, it's like revisionist history. Like, he doesn't remember what actually happened to himself when he was in this situation the last time. Look, the reality is, I think Dak Prescott's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I think that Dak Prescott needs Ezekiel Elliott to make his life easier. I mean, if you want to use their situation on offense without him and rely on a passing game, look, they had mixed results when he was suspended for those 6 games last year. You want to roll the dice with that? Go right ahead. We'll be here ready to mock you if that's the case.
Well, I just love that Jerry Jones, he devalues not just Ezekiel Elliott, but he devalues the entire position of running back, knowing the history of the position of running back at the Cowboys. And something tells me once they redo his deal, he might change his tune a little bit. He might talk about how it's so important that they have Ezekiel Elliott and they're so proud to have him locked up. Well, he has sort of had a little preemptive strike, another negotiation, not necessarily through the media, but this time through the roster. They've signed Alfred Morris, who has played with the Cowboys before. Do you think they would really actually use Alfred Morris, the running back position, come week one?
Yeah, I think they may have to, because if I'm Zeke, I'm willing to sit this thing out for a while. Like, look, Le'Veon Bell's situation got mixed results, and I know we may be able to talk about Le'Veon Bell a little later. But there's a principle to this. You're a running back. You only have so many miles on you. The average lifespan of a running back in the NFL is only 3.5 years. And the problem with the way that the league is set up currently, if you draft a running back high, Jacoby, you basically don't ever really have to pay him long term because he's under contract for 4 years. The fifth year is an option, and then you can franchise him for 2 years. So if I'm Zeke, I want to get paid as soon as I can because I'm that important to this particular roster and their win total. And if I'm Jerry, I kind of think about it differently. Do I want to maximize paying him when he's still in his prime and he's got fresh legs? Yes, that's the way I would look at it if I were Jerry Jones.
Well, Ezekiel Elliott is looking at it from the beach in Cabo. ESPN has confirmed a report from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas that Ezekiel Elliott is not just waiting in the wings outside of training camp to join the team the second that they sign a contract. He's in Cabo training. What do you think about him training in Cabo?
Well, he trained there actually during the suspension that I mentioned earlier. He was there for those 6 weeks. He likes that it's quiet, that there's no noise necessarily. He's not necessarily catching up with gas bags like you and me on television talking about him training in Cabo. So he can focus on actually working out there, it seems like. So I'm all about it, man. Go wherever you need to go to get your mind right.
Well, I've been to Cabo, and I certainly wasn't training, and I certainly didn't get my mind right. I had my mind very, very, very wrong, and I had a great time. So, but moving on, like with all these moves, with Ezekiel Elliott holding out, with them signing Alfred Morris, with him devaluing the running back position on television, who do you think has more leverage right now, Zeke or the Cowboys?
I would say Zeke because I don't think they can win very many games without Zeke. It's just as simple as that, Jacoby.
Well, this is an interesting little just piece of news that Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, they're all kind of like interested in kind of locking in, getting some more money with the Cowboys. And Amari Cooper's agent is in town in training camp. Is this significant? Do you think Amari Cooper also wants a new contract?
Oh, of course. I mean, especially coming off the year he had with the Cowboys. Now, look. It's going to be fascinating to see if they're willing to pay Amari Cooper, because if they pay Amari Cooper, then I'm really upset if I'm Zeke, because again, he's kind of the straw that stirs the drink there. And Cooper only has a 9-game sample size with the Cowboys, even as good as it was. I'd be pretty furious if I were Zeke if that does end up happening.
So we both follow the NBA pretty closely, and it's pretty cut and dry in the NBA. You get a little bit of time, you get a week or two, you spend up all your salary cap money, you've got your roster, you're heading to training camp clean. NFL doesn't really work like that. So now you've got Jerry Jones, you've got some of your best skilled position players at every position wanting new deals. What do you do with all this if you're Jerry Jones?
You gotta pay him, right? Like, this is the reality of the world you live in. And here's the thing, in the NFL, the salary cap, unlike in the NBA, goes up, at a higher clip, at a higher percentage. So, you should still be able to kind of fit everyone in. Now, it may cost you some guys on defense, or maybe some guys on special teams that you like, or whatever, or even at other positions that are the non-glamour positions. But that's the reality of the NFL. You either gotta be willing to cut bait, or you gotta pay the guys and deal with the consequences.
Well, let me ask you a question here.
Let's do it.
Because Jalen Rose did something last year that's very pertinent to this conversation, and that is draft Le'Veon Bell in fantasy. What? Hold on to him for almost the entire year, and it didn't really work out for him great. No. And now we have this from Le'Veon Bell. He's apologized to people that drafted him last year, like Jalen Rose. He went on to Twitter and said, "This is long overdue, but I want to take a moment to apologize to the fantasy owners who picked me last year. I'm sorry I couldn't pull through for y'all, but trust me, this year is about to be way different. I'm bringing the championship this year," and devil face, devil face. So, Mr. Sedano, would you draft Le'Veon Bell, say like the top five this year if you're a fantasy owner?
I would consider it. Adam Gase is a good offensive coach. I don't know if he's a good head coach. I think that there's some challenges there. I love Sam Darnold, and he doesn't have a ton of weapons on the outside, so I feel like Le'Veon Bell is going to be a big-time player in the passing game. We know he can run the ball. He's as diverse a running back as arguably we've ever seen since LaDainian Tomlinson. So I'm all in on him. I am actually all in on him apologizing, too, because most guys that play those positions in the NFL, they lambaste fans who get all bent out of shape about their fantasy team. Here's Le'Veon Bell embracing all that. I love that he's doing that.
And it's such a big part of the football experience now is fantasy. And you can't just deny that as a running back. You can't deny that as a skilled position player who can get drafted to a fantasy team and upset thousands of people that did draft them. But do you think there's a part of him that could also apologize to, I don't know, Steeler fans?
What? What are you talking about? What is it?
No, it's just an idea.
Yes. Yeah, he should apologize to them. Now, if he doesn't want to apologize to the Steelers as an organization, I totally get that. Like, I'm cool. I get you draw the line there. But, yeah, he probably should have sent out a tweet to Steeler fans. Though, my guess is they weren't necessarily so nice to him last season on social media. Le'Veon Bell has become, like, my spirit animal. I love the video he had last week or whatever when he's talking about, like, yo, you think Beyonce sings all day? Like, you know, she's got stuff to do in between singing. And, I got stuff to do in between training. So I just love his approach overall, but he should shout out the Steeler fans for sure.
Well, Le'Veon Bell is also my spirit animal. That's because I like to have a good time. You know what I mean? Like, let's not forget that Le'Veon Bell, he really likes to enjoy himself in the offseason. Because if you follow him on social, he is not just training all the time. He lets you in. Like, I love athletes that let you in, let you see what they're really like. Yeah. Not just this polished sort of, like, agent-approved social media presence. And Le'Veon Bell gets buckets. Le'Veon Bell's got rap songs. Le'Veon Bell, I think he's both of our spirit animal for almost the same reason. Look at him there.
Yeah, and he's got the cash money, right? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So,
yes.
But his buckets are interesting. He's got a very slow release there. Like, I feel like if he was playing on, like, a semi-pro squad or a pro squad, they'd need to change that release quickly.
Well, he looks like me on my, like, very old, very washed-up rec team. That's fast for us. That's fast for us, George.
Yeah, that's fair. But he is a professional athlete. I understand. But, like, you know, you got to have a little quicker release if you're going to play with other professional athletes.
It is now time for a very important news that matters. This is very important for all of us. Very important. There's been a new study done by US Foods, and it basically wanted to look at all the habits of delivery drivers. We've all known Seamless, Grubhub, DoorDash, all of those delivery drivers. They pulled hundreds of them, and one thing they learned is that, let's get it right, 28% admitted to eating some of the food before it got to its destination.
What?
George, will you ever order from one of these services again?
So here's the thing. Yesterday was National Chicken Wing Day. And
yes,
I have done the DoorDash with my friends at Wingstop. And yesterday I decided, you know what? After reading this story, I'm picking it up. I ain't messing around. You know, I've never noticed a nibble in any of my chicken wings when I order from Wingstop. I've never noticed a nibble out of my pizza when my pizza delivery guy drops off the pizza. I feel like that's also really hard to kind of pull off. But yeah, I am now going to be more prone to going and picking up the stuff myself, for sure.
So I really thought about this, and I was disgusted at first, right? I was just disgusted. I was like, how could you possibly do that? Eat someone else's food when you're paid and tipped to actually go there and deliver it. But here's the thing, George. If you've ever been really hungry before, like, you ever been so hungry, like, when you get your lunch and you're walking to the office, but you're just so hungry you have to eat it before you get there. And if I'm looking at, like, I don't know, something that comes in the quantity of over, like, six, like chicken tenders or French fries especially. Like, if it's French fries and I'm hungry and I'm smelling those fries and I'm on my way there, I'm eating your French fries.
Yeah, but here's,
like, if I take three of your 35 fries, that is not a big deal.
It is, because where have your hands been, Jacoby? You know what I'm saying? Like, are you pumping gas before you're eating my fries? Like, then I got gas fries, basically. Like, you know, there's so many things that can happen here. I don't need no contamination, man. Like, I like to keep it healthy. You know what I'm saying?
So are you going to sit here and speak into a microphone and look right into the camera and say, if you were starving and you're delivering someone fries, you would not eat a fry?
No, man, I'd pull over and get my own set of fries. You know what I'm saying? Like, it costs $1.25 or whatever it is. You can get your own fries.
Well, you are a better person than I am.
Clearly.
That's not a very high bar to get over. It's really not a very high bar to get over.
No.
Well, in the wake of the Women's World Cup victory and calls for equal pay, U.S. soccer president Carlos Cordero contended Monday that over the past decade or so stretch of time that they have actually paid the women millions of dollars more than they have paid the men's team.
What?
Now, this seems to be some creative accounting, because others have refuted this claim, saying that this is not exactly apples to apples comparison. The women's compensation also includes their league team, and the World Cup compensation is a little bit different, and they excluded that from the numbers. That being said, what do you think about this move from Carlos in the wake of the controversy about equal pay?
It's pretty weak when you think about it. Like, everyone can see the numbers, right? Like, it's very easy. All you have to do is do a couple Google searches, and you can kind of figure this thing out yourself. So clearly not a sophisticated maneuver there by the president in this particular situation, Carlos Cordero. And the reality is, man, sports is supposed to be the ultimate meritocracy, Jacoby. And these women are unbelievable. They are, like, again, they're the center of our soccer universe in this country, in a country where we love to win. So you know what? They should get paid. Like, they bring home the trophy more times than not. They deserve what is coming to them, and that's getting paid.
And anyone with common sense feels that way. And this also, like, you know, there's two places that this case will play out. There's the court of public opinion, and you and I both work in the media, and we understand how to manage that message. And if you're Carlos, instead of saying, you know what, all of you heroes that just won the World Cup, you're all wrong. This is not actually happening in the reality. That's the wrong approach. The right approach is to say, listen, we can't go backwards in time. We look forward to partnering with you and working with you and readjusting the finances and making something that's fair for both sides and fixing this problem that's obviously a problem. Like, why not just take that approach?
Yeah, I would agree. It would make him look so much better in this situation. And look, I get the finances of it, right? The rights for the men's World Cup is much larger than the women's World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
So that's part of the problem that he has. But there's gotta be a happy medium here where he can find a way to raise their salaries and their compensation to make them feel like, hey, this is justified, the cause that we have, and obviously feel like they're compensated properly for their work.
Of course, like, it is a more nuanced conversation than like, hey, just give them more money. But it's not as dumbed down as they're already making more money. They're just, like, you know, kind of fabricating this whole situation. And I look forward to seeing how this plays out in both places, the court and the court of public opinion, over time as we get more developments. But there's something else that's sort of like bubbling up that's a little bit controversial that you and I are both familiar with. We've both been in the media for a long time, and we're very familiar with the conversation about anthem protests. And it seemed that was mostly all we talked about when it came to NFL conversations a few years ago. But then over time, whether it was fatigue or it was just less people doing it, it sort of like bubbled down. Especially last year, we didn't talk about the anthem protests as much. Well, Eric Reid just recently told the Charlotte Observer, after signing a deal with the Panthers, that he will continue his anthem protests. So my question for you is, moving forward and looking forward, week one, week two, week three, week four, how much do you think anthem protests will be part of the narrative of the NFL this season?
You know, Jacoby, I don't think it's going to be as much as it was in previous years. I agree with you. I think that basically the television companies who broadcast the games, and understandably so, it's a partnership with the NFL. They're not going to show these situations unless they deem it newsworthy. And look, that's a super subjective situation at that point. You know, look, I think if you're Eric Reid, you continue doing that. He feels like, and rightly so, right, that social injustice didn't just stop in his particular eyes. And this is his quote, that things may have gotten worse here recently. So he does believe that he has a just cause. I agree with him. And I think that in this country, we are born to have freedom of expression if you are born in this country. And he's exercising that right, and more power to him, man.
The Jalen and Jacoby Podcast is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven. George, you're in Los Angeles. You have a Los Angeles radio show. So excited to talk to you about the Lakers.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis was on our girl, Sarah Spain's That's What She Said podcast.
Shout out.
And he said this about failure.
I don't think I have a failure that I've had yet. Obviously, you know, at the end of my career, if I don't win a championship, that would be, I feel like that's one of my biggest failures. But right now, I still have a lot to do in this world, you know, on and off the court. So I don't think I failed at anything. You know, I think I just, I can continue to just do it over until I'm, you know, succeed at it.
So he's never had a failure, but he still has a lot to do on and off the court. But if he doesn't get a championship in his career, it's a failure. Do you think it would be a failure if he didn't get a championship this year with the Lakers?
I think for him, it won't be a failure because he does have a long time to go. But I do think the window of LeBron and AD as a pairing is smaller than I think people think. Mm. I think we've got about 2 years of like LeBron still at an MVP type of level, including this particular season. So if they don't win it this year in the wide open NBA that everyone's discussing, and it is, it's more wide open because we've got, you can make the case, I don't know, 6, 7, maybe even 8 teams have a shot, at least a puncher's chance at a championship. Because of that, I do think that they don't win this year. I think it's a failure. I absolutely do believe that, but I think it's more because of LeBron's timeline, less because of AD.
That's a good point. I mean, Rob Pelinka, the GM, he's already come out and said it would be a failure if they don't win, which sets the expectations pretty high. I think that realistic expectations for the Lakers are probably Western Conference Finals. If they get to the Western Conference Finals and they lose to a really good team, I don't think you can go home and be upset about it. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about is heading into this Lakers season, you're there, you're in Los Angeles, you hear about all the details. Like, what do you think the realistic expectations are for the Lakers? And what do you think about Frank Vogel, someone who doesn't get spoken about a lot?
So I think the expectations, realistic expectations, are the finals. Like, I don't think it should be just Western Conference Finals. And I'll tell you this, if they get bounced in the Western Conference Finals by, let's say, the Clippers, that's a complete disaster, because that's the last team they want to get bounced by in this particular situation. I think that if they're healthy, that, and again, that's a big key, right? Because LeBron, I know he's been a robot and a cyborg most of his career, Jacoby, but you know, the biggest predictor of future injury is past injury. And LeBron's coming off his worst injury of his career. And he's going to be 35 years old on December 30th. That stuff, you know, matters at this point. Anthony Davis has had a lot of nicks and bruises over the years. How many games does he miss? What's the timing of those injuries if he does miss games? But if they're healthy going into the playoffs, I just don't think there's anyone that can stop those two, because they complement each other better than maybe any teammate LeBron has had. So I think it's championship or bust. I'm a firm believer in that, and I think that should be the expectation. As far as Vogel's concerned, though, I like the Vogel hiring. I think that they totally screwed up the Ty Lue thing. I'm totally in on that conversation, but they could have done way worse than Frank Vogel. I actually think Vogel is an excellent defensive coach. He's one of the top defensive coaches we've seen of this particular generation. That Pacers team was a top-rated defense multiple years while he was under command there as the head coach. And I think that he's going to have a bit of a challenge trying to make this team a great defensive team, but I think he's good enough to make them a top 10 defensive team. My thing with Frank Vogel is, and he's talked about this in Sports Illustrated recently, I'd be worried about Jason Kidd and the saucer eyes of Jason Kidd and the history of Jason Kidd trying to kind of usurp people to get what he wants.
So one thing I think that you said that was really intelligent was the health of the Lakers. I mean, you can say this about any team. You know what I mean? Any team that has superstars, they need to be healthy for that team to be successful. But there's one name you didn't mention, which I think could swing the success of this team wildly if they're healthy, and that's Boogie Cousins. Mm-hmm. I mean, Boogie Cousins was coming off an Achilles injury last year. He had flashes with the Warriors. He had flashes in the finals, but he wasn't 100% right also with the quad injury as well. But if you get a healthy Boogie Cousins, you mix them in, mix him in with these other players, like, I think that could make this team a championship favorite. What do you expect to see from Boogie this year?
I don't think anyone really knows, but I'm with you on this, that everyone's very quick to anoint it a quote-unquote big three of LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Kuzma, because they feel like he's the next guy coming as a young guy, that they feel like he survived basically the auditions of last season. But let's face it, if you have championship aspirations, you're going to need DeMarcus Cousins to contribute in a big way. You need to find market inefficiencies. And they got him on the cheap. That's a market inefficiency as far as I'm concerned. Now, you know, look, Kuzma doesn't make a lot of money either. I get that. But he's still a young guy. He hasn't been through these type of playoff battles before. And DeMarcus Cousins, going through what he went through last year, just the chaos and the turmoil of his injuries, on top of that, still getting there with a team that got to the finals and dealing with all of that and the trials and tribulations there, I think has made him a different type of player. So you're right. If he's right, then all of a sudden things change, and they have a dynamic that no one else really can rival at this point, which is they can go big and even athletic, particularly with Anthony Davis, unlike any of the other squads that are championship favorites.
I think it's also, you mentioned sort of like the what Boogie went through last year. Don't forget, like, He sat the bench. Like, for one of his best games in the finals, he was sitting on the bench, looking like he would never even make the rotation until he came in and then could contribute. I think that he could find himself in a similar role, being a small piece of what the Lakers want to do, and then all of a sudden, if Anthony Davis goes down or something, being a big piece of what the Lakers want to do. But we're talking about what the Lakers want to do in pieces. Like, they've got a lot of new pieces. We mentioned Boogie Cousins, Quinn Cook, Danny Green, Frank Vogel, Jason Kidd. Like, with all these new personalities, how much of an adjustment period do you expect starting the season?
Oh, I think, look, man, the first easily 25 games are going to be an adjustment period. I think that you have to kind of get used to each other. It's not like the Clippers, for example, who have, granted, they have Kawhi and Paul George, and we'll see if Paul George starts the season, but the rest of that cast is used to playing together. With the Lakers, there's not any familiarity, right? Like, maybe Rondo, I guess, with AD and DeMarcus, because he's played with them previously, and obviously he's played with LeBron some. Kuzma's played with LeBron. But as a collective, there's not enough guys who have played together. So there's going to be some of that time. And I do think that they're going to have to adjust to the way Frank Vogel wants them to play defense. You got to play defense on a string. He's going to need to get real buy-in from LeBron, particularly, who, let's face it, has kind of paced himself on that side of the court over the last several years, dating back to about 2014. So I do think that the first 25 games, if they can come out of that, let's just say, you know, 15-10, you know, like 17-8, that's a good start to the season, because I think they can potentially take off from there.
I agree. And you make a really good point about their defense, because I always say that LeBron James load manages 50% of the time. Defense. That's when he load manages. Like, that's how LeBron James gets his rest. That's how he gets his games off, because he doesn't really help his teammates on defense as much if you're watching closely.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Remember, Brian Windhorst had that article a couple years ago that he walked more than anyone in the league. Now, he didn't necessarily love that analogy, but it was true. And that it's to your point. He was resting on defense. He was walking more.
Exactly. I'd say walking. I've seen him do less than walking on defense before. Let's just say that. But when he wants to be fair, when he wants to in the playoffs, he's one of the best defenders in the league.
Agreed.
Moving on. David Griffin, Pelicans GM. He's got Zion, right? Zion's there. And we've all talked about Zion. Charles Barkley's come up and Larry Johnson's come up. And David Griffin had another comparison for Zion. Let's take a look at what he had to say. Here's what he told The Athletic. He said, the thing about Zion, it's not that he's going to carry you offensively. It's that he's going to be able to facilitate offense. If you look at him as an extremely athletic Draymond Green type who may be able to facilitate all things for others and get out in transition and make plays, that's exciting. And because that's what you natively really does. We're not going to ask him to carry an undue burden. We're going to ask him to be Zion. I mean, I remember LeBron James coming out of high school and I said, like, this is one of the best passers, like a natural passer I've ever seen, a facilitator. I mean, Zion as a facilitator, as a Draymond Green, get the ball in the middle and make plays for others. What do you think about that philosophy?
I love it. I love it. Look, he certainly has the right, IQ for that. You talk to people who have been around him, particularly at Duke. They say he's one of the smartest guys that they've ever seen. Like, he really knows how to play the angles on offense and on defense, for that matter, and uses his athleticism to his advantage with that stuff. So I do. I think that he is good enough, despite how amazing he is physically, and everyone just kind of talks about how he overwhelms people there. He can think the game through. I don't think there's any question about that. And that's what Draymond does. Draymond is big and strong. He's not as athletically gifted as Zion, but I think Zion has some of those attributes, and I think that will come with time, that we'll see more and more of that. But they've got some of those guys on that roster, right? Lonzo Ball is certainly one of those guys. Drew Holiday is one of those guys. J.J. Redick is a thinking man's guy on the floor. Like, they've got a lot of guys on that floor who are really smart basketball players. Brandon Ingram is another guy. So I do think that those guys will be able to complement each other, and Zion can be kind of the centrifugal force of all of that.
I love the idea of centrifugal force, because that is kind of what Draymond was, especially back before they had KD. They would run a pick and roll. Draymond would get the ball in the middle. He'd have some room to operate, maybe throw to a Clay in the corner, maybe throw a lob to somebody. And you were in summer league. I'm kind of in love with Jackson Hayes. Like, Trey, walk me off of this. I'm in love with Jackson Hayes. Not that he's the future league, he's going to be the best center, but as like a young DeAndre Jordan type. Like, I'm going to throw you lobs, you're going to get blocks, you're going to get rebounds. What did you see from Jackson Hayes in summer league?
He's got great energy. He's a really good teammate. Like, he does the little things right. Like, he sets good screens, right? Like, he goes up and fights for rebounds. I do think he needs to put on a little bit of weight. That's something that when I talked to the Pelican staff, they talked about. But they really loved at Summer League, and this is something that we really keyed in on and focused on the broadcast. His chemistry initially, right out of the gate, with Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who's the other kid they drafted in the first round at 17. I talked to the Pelicans people, Jacoby, and they told me they had him way higher on their board than where they actually drafted him. Remember, they traded down a couple of times to get into about the middle of that first round, and they were able to take him there. They think that he's a guy that can push for a rotation spot in that, you know, bevy of guards that they have back there.
Now, tread carefully, Mr. Sedano, because now it is time for the Don't Get Fired topic of the day.
And now, the Don't Get Fired topic of the day.
I hope I don't need to explain this to you, Mr. Sedano. I hope you're familiar with all the policies that we have here at the Worldwide Leader in Sports. According to a recent report, an Apple contractor that was hired to kind of like listen to a lot of the dictation interaction between Siri and some of the, you know, some of the Siri clients, they whistle blew. And they said that Siri routinely is accidentally triggered and it records things like human coitus, drug deals, private information between doctors and clients, and then these conversations are then reviewed by a contractor, and that information is gone to strangers. Do you have a Siri or Alexa in your home? And knowing this, would you get one or will you stop?
Well, I have an Alexa at the home. We do. My wife needs it. She loves it. I honestly never have real conversations in front of it. I'm one of these guys who believes Big Brother is always listening. The joke I have here at the company is, on my private phone, I didn't actually have the IT people install the email app. I actually use a third party email app that allows me through Microsoft to get my company email. Because I don't need Big Brother on me, man. That's just the reality of it. Like, no offense. Everyone knows that's the case. I do have a company phone. You know, I have a Schefter situation with two phones. I actually rarely use it, though. But yeah, I don't talk in front of Alexa because Alexa's a snitch. And you know what? I don't need snitches in my life. And I always keep the phone near me at times. But whenever I am gonna have a private conversation, I, much like I do here, when the mics are hot, you don't say things, right? Like, that's the reality we live in. When there's a hot mic around, you don't know who's listening back, you know, in Bristol or in LA or in New York. So you're careful what you say. So I am more careful with Alexa. With my phone, I've probably been a little more reckless, but now that you brought this up, that Apple is always listening, you know what? The phone's getting tossed into the closet when I'm having private conversations.
I have a few follow-up questions that I will not ask, but I will say this is, you treat technology the same way Jalen treats Uber drivers. Like, Jalen refuses to have any kind of conversation about anything in front of Uber drivers. I'm like, Jalen, this person is not listening. Not only do they not listening, they're in lags, have full command of the English language. I think we'll be okay. So you're trying to say that if you and your wife are about to have a private conversation, you will take your phone and then put it in a drawer and close it. I don't believe you.
From now on.
I do not believe you.
From now on, I will do that. I will set it into another room far away from where we're at. I'll go charge it somewhere at one of the charging stations. I'll do something. But the Alexa stuff is real. The Alexa's in our kitchen, and we don't really have like real conversations in the kitchen. Like, we try to, like, whenever I have to have a real conversation, which doesn't happen all that often, let's be real.
Sure.
But occasionally when we have it, it's in the living room, which is you know, a couple rooms away from the kitchen. But I am aware of the Alexa stuff. The Alexa stuff has been out there for a long time. I wasn't aware about Apple. So Siri, I'm watching you, Siri. I'm watching you.
One of the big differences between New York and LA is our kitchen is our living room and also our bedroom and our bathroom, which is one thing I do miss about Los Angeles. This segment needs no explanation. Are you ready, Mr. Sedano?
Yes, sir. Stay ready. You don't have to get ready.
Ezekiel Elliott is holding out of camp, but not doing it camp adjacent where he can just join if he gets a new deal. He's in Cabo training while he's holding out. Training on vacation in Mexico while you're holding out, soft move or boss move?
Boss move, especially because he's already pulled it once when he was under suspension. And he gets his mind right. He gets to kind of keep away from you and me, the gas bags all talking about him. And look, man, he gets to soak in the sun. You know, he's not out there and like, you know, California is great, but Mexico's a different vibe, man. It's more chill. It's more relaxed. Tranquility, serenity. It's key to get your mind right.
I've been to Cabo twice, and all I did was chill and relax. Like, how much actual training a day do you think he's doing there?
It looks like, at least, you know, what I saw in that TMZ article, like, he looks like he's running every day in the sand. You ever try to run in the sand, Jacoby? That's hard, man. That's a boss move in itself.
Whenever I run the sand, I get closer to the water every single step I take. Just right. It's a little bit easier, so it feels a little bit less like sand. All right, boss move. There you go. Next, a Saints superfan filed a lawsuit in Louisiana court about the famous no-call at the end of the NFC Championship. So this has gotten so far that now a Louisiana judge has ruled that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and the three referees from the game should answer questions about the game under oath in September.
What?
Taking your on-field grievances all the way to court, soft move or boss move?
Soft move. I mean, come on, man. Like, as a taxpayer in that part of the country, I would be upset. I'd be like, really? I mean, the game is over, man. Like, we still got Drew Brees. You know?
What are they going to do? What result do you want from this?
Yeah, they're not reversing the game. They changed the rule. It's now basically the Rams rule or whatever with pass interference, and you can challenge it. They've done that. They've adopted it. Like, you're not going to the Super Bowl. They're not giving you the trophy retroactively. So, yeah, soft move. You're wasting taxpayer money. You're wasting your own damn time, too.
George, I have a hot take about this call that I don't think I've said into a microphone before.
Uh-oh.
It's just us two here, right?
Yeah.
Not that bad of a call when you watch it live. You watch the live game speed, it's understandable. It's a wrong call, but it's not as egregious when you watch the game angle live. I remember sitting there being like, maybe that wasn't pass interference, but it wasn't that bad of a call.
Yeah,
don't tell anybody I said that.
I agree, though. Like, if you watch it in real speed, we have the luxury of watching it from 37 different angles and watching it in slow motion. And, of course, when you look at it that way and it gets repeated and repeated, it becomes more and more egregious when you watch it. But, yeah, in real life, man, these are humans. And, by the way, a referee in a split second could blink and it could look even closer than we saw even on television.
Well, Steve Ballmer has changed the roster a little bit this offseason, and eventually they will change arenas, and now he's floated out the idea of changing the logo and the team name. George, changing a team name that you've had in the franchise for 41 years, soft move or boss move?
Boss move. Get that stench off of you, right? They were considered a joke franchise for many, many years under Donald Sterling, arguably the worst in all of sports. The Clippers is... That's a San Diego association. It's not an LA association. Start fresh. You're trying to start something new. They've done a really good job going in the community, you know, rebuilding 350 courts. They're trying to attract young people, Jacoby. That's the way you change stuff. You start generational and you start very young. And I think that the name change works too. You do it. Boss move.
So a couple things about this. Number one, I wholeheartedly support changing team names if they no longer match the city you're in. Like, the Utah Jazz is one of the most ridiculous things that we all just accept. Like, we all just accept it's called the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
You know, Utah, I've been to Salt Lake City. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. But why are they called the Jazz? And also, another one. Why are they called the Lakers?
There are no lakes in LA.
What are we talking about? Silver Lake? This is a man-made lake. Yeah. There are no lakes. There's no rain. There's no water in Southern California. How can you have a drought and also have a team name that's the Lakers? There is, like, listen, maybe there are some boats in Marina Del Rey, but this should not be called the Clippers anymore. Like, I think all team names that no longer match the city should be changed. And I feel more strongly about that than most things in my life. I had to get that off my chest. I'm sorry.
Do it.
Anthony Davis joined our colleague and friend, Sarah Spain, on a podcast. And here's what he reviewed.
What's the thing about yourself you'd most like to improve?
Me being scared of the dark.
How scared? Like, nightlights everywhere?
Like, TV on, bathroom light on. Some light has to be on.
What if you fell in love with someone who needed it to be completely dark to sleep?
Man, we ain't gonna make it.
What do you think is out there in the dark?
I watched too many crazy movies when I was a kid, and it messed me up for life.
Could be anything. Could be anything out there.
I'm assuming that your 5-year-old is also scared of the dark. Anthony Davis being a grown man and being scared of the dark just like our kids. Soft move or boss move?
Yeah, that's a soft move. I'm sorry, man. My 5-year-old needs a nightlight. You know, that you're a grown man. Like, come on, man. And you're 7 feet tall and you have the wingspan of a pterodactyl. Like, what's wrong? You're like an extraterrestrial. You know, like, you're going to be in Space Jam fighting monsters. Okay? Like, you shouldn't be afraid of anything.
All right. Being scared of the dark is a soft move. But admitting it on a national platform is a boss move.
Okay. You know what
I mean? We always want vulnerability.
Okay. You know what
I mean? We always want people to be honest and confess. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you. It's definitely a soft move to be scared of the dark. But I just like the fact that he opened up to our friend Sarah Spain. Who can make you do that when you go on that podcast? She got me once too. Moving on. In Tempe, Arizona, you can get pulled over and given a ticket by police officers. But you can get pulled over and given a ticket by police officers for good driving, and that ticket will be for a free beverage at a Circle K. So just take that in for a second, George, because it's a lot of information. Imagine being in a car and putting on your turn signal, turning left, and then hearing the whoop whoop of a police car behind you, pulling over, and them giving you a ticket for a free beverage at a Circle K. Getting pulled over for good driving, soft move or boss move?
That's a soft move just because the marketing person should be fired, okay? I don't know about you,
yes.
But even if I'm listening to just a song on the radio that has a siren, I literally freeze up and freak out. Like, there's no way that I want a cop pulling me over at any point, regardless of what I'm doing, whether it's good or bad. I don't need that in my life because I need to keep my heart rate down.
First of all, great point about songs with sirens in them. Or songs that sound like a text message or something. Like, they always confuse me every time. But also, it's like, Circle K, there are other ways to give people free beverages. Like, there's other things, positive reinforcement things you can do in the community. You can have people out there on foot, but you don't need to involve law enforcement. Let's not get law enforcement involved in this, Circle K. Also, Circle K, shout out to you. I like your stores. Moving on.
Shout out.
George. Carmelo Anthony, still a free agent. And how it ended with the Rockets last year just didn't feel right to us. And it also didn't feel right to Dame Lillard. He has started a hashtag. Hashtag vote for Melo farewell season. He believes that Carmelo Anthony should have a farewell season. Do you see that happening in the NBA this year?
Unfortunately, Jacoby, I don't see that happening. Mm. If it would have happened, it would have been with the Nuggets or the Knicks. It's not like some random team is going to sign him to do the farewell tour. And by the way, the Knicks could use it. They could use the pub at this point because, let's face it, you know, people are clearly mixed on their off-season plans. You know, they have a plan for 2021 free agency, but they signed like 17 power forwards. They've got like a young squad. I do think it would have been nice to do if you're them, because clearly he's beloved by that particular fan base. I mean, the Nuggets would have made some sense, but I don't see it. Here's one thing I think that should happen. Team USA should bring him aboard. He's the most decorated Olympian we have.
That's what we need. That's the plenty of farewell. It's time for News That Matters. Alex Kennedy on Twitter has an update for us, and it's huge news. HBO is doing a scripted version of the Showtime Lakers, and not only that, they need someone to play Kareem. George, who should play Kareem in an HBO scripted series?
Ryan Hollins. Shave his head, shave the mustache. He can be the guy. He clearly is an actor on television here, so why not?
I'm on the same page. However, I've got someone with acting experience.
Oh.
The height and the basketball acumen. It's Jalen Rose.
Oh.
The only problem is he would have to shave the head. He's done it before in college. Jalen Rose needs to get back on his thespian horse and ride that thing all the way to HBO.
I love it. You know what? That's way better than Ryan Hollins. And he's a better actor. We already know that.
All right. George, we were talking about Eddie Murphy during the break. I think it's worth bringing to the podcast. There's rumored to be a $70 million Netflix deal for Eddie Murphy specials. I'm assuming there's more than one. I have to admit, unpopular opinion.
Uh-oh.
I don't think that Eddie Murphy stand-up special is that valuable in today's day and age.
See,
you have to remember how long it's been since he did stand-up.
See, I disagree. You know why? Because the people who will watch that are the people with disposable income, right? Like, that's the thing.
That's
like,
fair.
The generation of people who remember Eddie Murphy during Delirious and Raw. Like, I was a kid when those things were on. And I remember I would wear out the VHS tapes of
Absolutely the same.
Delirious and Raw. Like, I could recite, at, when I was literally like 9 or 10 years old, I could recite Eddie Murphy Raw line by line. I always wanted to, like, I fancied I always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I don't know, I just don't know if I have the right personality to deal with all the crap that you have to deal with to try to become a stand-up comedian. But just like from a, like, I studied him unlike anything I've ever studied in my life, at that particular age. So I do think that it's worth it. First of all, because, I mean, my guess is just to have him in any role is going to cost you tens of millions of dollars. And that thing could live forever, especially if it's multiple. And if he's bringing the heat after all those years where comedy, look, Jacoby, normally, it doesn't age well, man. It's rare that comedy ages well. Nope. But if he can make that happen, it's a huge win for Netflix and for him, for that matter. Preach.
Well, a few things. It reminds me of like a casting a Tarantino movie. You know what I mean? Like when he brings back Pam Grier or John Travolta, it's like a nostalgia play. It's like Eddie Murphy will get the nostalgia people, the people like you and I that had VHS tapes of Raw and Delirious and watched them over and over again. It's back and forth. Like I, like you, watched that with my friends, watched that alone, watched it over and over again. But there's a couple things about it. Number one, some of the content does not age well. Like that is not 2019 friendly comedy.
No.
At all, it's shocking that I was like a kid when I listened to those jokes and repeated them on the playground. And it is not 2019 friendly, but there's one thing that I cannot wait for if he does a stand-up special. One thing, one aspect of his performance, it's his outfit.
Leather suit.
Like those are as remembered for the outfits as they are the comedy. Like you don't just listen to Eddie Murphy stand-up comedy, you watch Eddie Murphy stand-up comedy. Like the outfits just took over.
Yeah, the red leather suit, then the blue leather suit for Raw. Yeah. Like, yeah, you absolutely have to go that way. It's funny, I was watching Comedians in Cars with him and Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. It was funny because it was a 40-minute long Comedians in Cars having coffee, which is not the norm, obviously. No. But because it was Eddie Murphy, they went that long. And the first 20 minutes, it felt like he was guarded, even with someone like Jerry, who he's familiar with. And then after about 20 minutes, man, like he was Eddie. And it was like, oh, yeah. But it was slow, I thought, for the first couple of minutes because he's been, you know, to some extent out of the public eye a lot here over the last several years. And I think that, you know, remember he had that appearance on the Saturday Night Live anniversary special, and people thought that was strange, the way he played it so straight and serious. So it just seems like you need to kind of coax it out of him, and eventually Seinfeld did a great job of getting it out of him.
I will say this. If you are a young person and you want Eddie Murphy comedy, you obviously have to watch Delirious and Raw, but I want you to start with Best of Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Best of Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live, it's like Nas Illmatic. Like, there's just nothing bad about it. Yeah. Like, from the first second to the last second, it's just banger after banger after banger. Best of Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live is one of my favorite pieces of art that I've ever witnessed on in my life.
But I thought you made a great point, is that you can't use 2019 sensibilities when you're watching those things, though.
No.
You can't do that.
No, you cannot do that. And that's not just with Eddie Murphy's stand-up comedy. I think
that's anything.
There's a lot of things that were said in the late 80s and the early 90s that just aren't kosher now, and for good reasons. I want to thank George for coming on the show. We actually are preempted tomorrow. We will be back on Thursday with another special co-host. Why is that, Karis?
We're not done. We're not done.
They my little guys. I love them.
Got to give the people now. Give people what they want.
What it do, baby?
Yeah.